countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
There are severe traffic delays in Dublin city centre this evening after protesting farmers parked tractors in the streets around the Dáil.
But they are refusing to leave and are blocking several streets around Leinster House.
Well, we're waiting for Minister Creed to come out and speak to us.
Senior management in that company have had death threats issued against them, and their partners and families have been intimidated in that local community.
We've just had confirmation from C&D Foods that they have reported death threats to Gardaí, threats made against their senior management.
This capital city does not belong to the people of Dublin. It belongs to the people of Ireland, and we have to come here to be listened to.
The farmers' tractor protest has been stood down, and traffic and public transport routes in Dublin are gradually returning to normal.
If Minister Creed does not do something, then as I say, come Christmas, Dublin will know what food, where the food comes from, because there'll be no farmer giving the food.
People have been asking this week, what exactly was the farmers' protest all about?
At the end of the day, what are people going to tell their boss when they get into work? Oh, well, I'm late because of these farmers.
It's a complicated combination of issues, but fundamentally, it's about the low price which farmers are being paid to produce beef.
Beef farmers are price takers because there is so little competition in the processing industry.
Here's one protesting farmer, James Gagan, telling Philip Boucher Hayes in simple terms why beef farmers are not making money.
Average cow, 2 acres per cow. You can rent that land, no problem at all, at 150 an acre. That's 300 per cow. You spend 75 an acre fertiliser, that's another 150 for 2 acres. We're up to 450 per cow. The contractor charges per cow on the average suckler farm is working out around...
Cutting silage,
spreading your slurry, is working out there around the 100 a cow. So now we're gone to 550. The average veterinary bill between herd testing and dosing and sick animals, treating sick animals and veterinary charges can run up near the 100 a cow between the cow and the calf.
So now
we're up to 650. You need another 100 per cow to run a tractor on a farm, run your own bit of machinery, a couple of fields of diesel for the tractor for the year, you're up by another about 100 a cow. We're up to going to heading for 750. You will buy in meal between to give some of the cow and the weaning. You will probably spend up about an average of 100 a cow. Now we're up to 850. You will probably give your accountant about 50 euro a cow to do your accounts. We're heading for the 900. And you could possibly spend another 100 on miscellaneous items between hedge cutting, a bit of drainage, a bit of reseeding. You're heading for the 1,000 a cow expenses. So you have a 640 sale and you have a 900 euro expense.
Inputs only, nothing to pay you?
No, there's no wages there. Now, the farmer is getting his single farm payment after that.
Your cost of production is now eating into the single farm payment.
Yes, that is where the issue is. So even with guys that are getting, like there's sucklermen getting maybe 20,000, 30,000 a year of single farm payment, it's actually going to pay bills.
What drove farmers to Dublin this week is uncertainty. Uncertainty about their future role in society. Low prices, extreme weather, Brexit, Mercosur, less cap funding in the future, and the online onslaught from environmentalists and vegans about what farmers do for a living is leaving them annoyed and fed up.
I think a lot of farmers feel completely under attack.
Thomas Duffy is the president of Macra na Ferma.
I think the general kind of narrative at the moment is a little bit anti-farmer, and it can be very negative, and we need to be maybe a little bit better about getting our voice out and getting it clear. And it's not just in Ireland, that's across the entire board. We need to make it clear, particularly to young people, the value of farming, and not just to the rural economy, but also to rural society.
On Wednesday night, as the protesters wheeled into Dublin city centre, 10 kilometres away in Castleknock, West Dublin, Thomas Duffy was hosting the Macra na Ferma Young Farmer of the Year competition. Despite the air of anxiety and uncertainty, there too remains an air of optimism among the newest generation of farmers.
Well, I think we do have the capacity to live up to those challenges, to face them down and to be able to deal with them. But can we do that easily? No. And what we need to do more than anything else is make sure that our young people are being supported to get into farming, and when they do get into farming, that they are properly supported by both state and the market in order to grow their farming businesses, and also to incentivise diversification and improved efficiency.
My name's Sean Ruddy. I'm the farm manager for Lyons Domain. We're currently running a suckler beef enterprise on the estate. I suppose we're not being given the opportunity to voice our opinion, to explain our story on how we do things, and to show that, you know, the vast majority of farmers in Ireland are doing a good job. And, you know, rather than being villainised, we should be supporting and championing them, and we don't get that opportunity to champion our farmers enough.
So I'm Sinead Connery, Farmers Common. I won Queen of the Land this year, and I am a student, and I'm a part-time farmer at home as well. Look, there's a huge crisis now with the methane that the cattle produce, and in my opinion, it's not good enough for the farmers to just say, oh, look, it's not the cow's fault. What we need to do is we need to come up with a persuasive argument, and we need to come up with methods and ways of feeding our animals. And there's research now being done about feeding them seaweed through rations. It's something that I'm currently looking into doing on our home farm to see would we be able to produce less methane. As I said, it's not good enough for the farmers just to say no. We need to come out and show that we're doing something to change the climate change, and that the blame won't be put on us.
At times, farmers would be forgiven for thinking everyone is down on them.
Joe Healy is president of the Irish Farmers Association.
It's crucial that people and the consumers get accurate information. You know, when we compare our national herd here of less than 7 million to the Brazilian herd of 230 million head of cattle, and we consider what they're doing in relation to the Amazon rainforest, where the size of a football pitch every minute, not every hour, every minute is being destroyed, and that's gone into beef production. So all we want is a level playing field, so that if we're producing to top quality standards, to environmentally friendly standards, you know, that countries that we have to compete with has to do the same.
Irish agriculture can be part of the solution.
Pat McCormick is president of the Irish Creamery Milk Suppliers Association.
But, you know, we've been receiving the product, same price for our product that we received 30 years ago, and that's not sustainable from an economic perspective. These improvements that will have to come about will come at a cost, and they cannot be borne by the primary producer. We all have to embrace change going forward, but equally we have to be proud of what we do, Damien.
Are you confident about your future as a farmer?
I'm very confident about my future as a farmer, but I do feel there is changes to be made. But the farmers are very willing to make these changes, and when they are told they need to change things, they'll do it. There's no hesitation about it. And I thoroughly believe that we are going to have a great future in farming.
Yes, and that was Sinead Connery there, who is this year's Queen of the Land. She is from County Roscommon. I'm just looking at a wonderful photograph of her on the front page of Irish Country Living, where she talks about her farming life and her studying as well. You'll see her there. You've just heard her. By the way, just in relation to the event, the Machrane Fermor Young Farmer of the Year Awards this week, Clare farmer Liam Hanrahan was announced as the overall winner. And by the way, the injunction against the two farmers, which was at the heart of the anger among farmer protests you heard at the top of that package, they've been struck out, paving the way for the Beef Task Force to meet around the table on Tuesday next. Suzanne Campbell, good morning.
Good morning.
You made it in across all the toys and the mess from last night. Some messy left.
The toy strip. Trail.
On my way in here this morning, I got a bit of a fright because I almost, well, I didn't almost, but I got a bit of a fright just between Chapel Lizard and Island Bridge soon after 5 a.m. A stag running along the road there outside the walls of the Phoenix Park. It's the third time I've seen this happening around the Castleknock area this year. I'm living there all my life, never saw it before. Another day, a stag and a deer running down there.
So they must
the
come out
road.
The gate, or coming where are they
the
coming
gates.
Out?
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's not good. Well, that's what you're talking about, because there was a recent cull there which annoyed people, and you live close to a deer-rich area as well. How is the population being controlled there?
Well, it's a really hot topic at the moment. You know, as you were saying, there was 25 fallow deer culled in Phoenix Park last week, and you know, the animal rights agencies or activists argued at the time that this is, you know, it's bad practice, and that there should be dealt a veterinary contraception or some kind of medical means to stop them reproducing. But if you're seeing them on the road, perhaps 25 is not enough. Deer have no natural predators, so So it's up to us humans to manage their numbers. We've also seen quite a lot of incidents around the countryside recently. And this has led to political figures like TD Matty McGrath calling for an immediate wild deer cull in the south. So people are getting very aggressed about it. So I live in a very deer-rich area on the outskirts of the village of Enniskerry, towards really on the bounds of Wicklow National Park. And we have found their numbers have really exploded in recent years. So I met with Damien Hannigan of the Irish Deer Commission to get to the bottom of this. And Damien is a shooting man. He culls deer along with other, 5,500, I think, other licence holders in Ireland. Some people say that that culling is still not enough. But what we need to do and what he pushes is examining deer populations area to area, as they really differ across the country. There's also a big problem in Ireland of people poaching deer because the numbers are quite plentiful in some places, lamping them, shooting them at night. So I met up with Damien just this week in Woodland, pretty near where I live, along the Dargle River, very close to the N11, the main route, south coastal route into Dublin. And it's normally a great spot for seeing there. It was 4:30, what I call deer o'clock around us. You always see them at 4:30. And of course, none turned up, but Damien did turn up. And I asked him what he makes of the comment from farmers, particularly that there are too many deer in the country.
Yeah, I suppose it's a common point that we hear, that people would make claims that we have too many. Some would even say we have too little. But the fact of the matter is, deer are wild animals. They exist in quite remote habitat in the majority of the time. So we've never undertaken a population census here in Ireland to say we have X number of deer in a particular county or in a particular area. Hunters make an annual cull return to the Department of Culture, Heritage and the Gaeltacht. And in those cull returns, they will state where they shot deer, the species and the sex of the animal. And while that data is not independently verified, hunters are required to sign a declaration saying the information is correct. And from that information, we can see that in the 12-month period for 2018, over 41,000 deer were culled in Ireland by licensed hunters. And we have 5,500 licensed hunters in Ireland. Mm. And from that cull figure, we can see that just over one third or 15,000 of those deer were culled here in County Wicklow. So that tells us that there's a large population of deer in County Wicklow.
What's forcing them down onto lower areas here? For example, I've lived just a field over there for 10 years. And in the past 3 years, I've noticed far more deer around the roads, up at my children's school, they're in the car park, they're around the village. What's brought that change about?
What we probably would see is anecdotal evidence that in localised areas, there is overpopulations of deer. But that would be the exception rather than the norm. In the vast majority of areas of Ireland, licensed deer stalkers very much manage deer at sustainable levels. Because it's important to note that deer are an important part of our natural heritage. They've existed here in Ireland for over 6,000 years and are fully protected under our Wildlife Act. So it's an offence to cull deer unless you're properly licensed to do so and within the appropriate seasons. So I suppose in those areas that deer can become a problem are often referred to as deer hotspots. Deer have three main requirements, and that would be food, shelter and peace and quiet, lack of disturbance. And when they are disturbed, which could be through illegal hunting or poaching, could be through forestry operations, they tend to move into new areas to get away from that disturbance.
Now, Suzanne, farmers are also very wary of deer because of the risk they present of passing TB to cattle. We talked about it on the programme a couple of weeks ago, even though there is a lot of controversy about this.
There's a lot of controversy about it. It's a tricky issue. You know, the Department of Agriculture are adamant here that deer do not bring TB into the cattle population. Deer are found to have TB, very different numbers in different areas. UCD are actually doing work into the strains of TB now, so we might be able to find out a little bit more about that. But putting that aside, we know that the figures there, as Damien says, the population in Wicklow is large and it's a real hot spot. But it doesn't mean that it's large in other areas of the country, like Tipperary or other herds. So we have to be really careful about that. But I talked to farmer Donny Anderson. He's up in the Dublin-Wicklow Mountains border, really. He's a member of the Dublin-Wicklow Mountains Forum. So I met him up in the Feather Beds, which people would be familiar with, right between the Dublin and Wicklow kind of county line. And over the 40 years he's been farming in Glenismole, he is really adamant that deer have grown in numbers.
Just for one example, we had a bit of meadow that we were keeping up there for to cut hay for the sheep or cut silage, but between the weather on one thing and another, it wasn't cut, and then there were a good few birds nesting in it and a few pheasants and that. So I left it a bit later, not to cut it while they were there. But then when I look into it at night, like, there could have been 20 deer in it some nights. So they were actually flattening it down. So it got to the stage then between that and the weather that it went down too much to even bother cutting it. And then as well as that, we can fence fairly well for sheep, but it's a different story fencing for deer. And they will jump if they want. But if they can find an easier way to go than jump, and they will go through the fence and make a hole, and then you have a gap. And even the hedges, like you'll see where they have clipped the hedges up, you know, because they go for anything that's sweet or green or that.
As Damien was saying, we don't know the population because there hasn't been a census taken. Is the population bigger, or are they coming more lowland? Are they coming into more human habitat, or is it a bit of both?
It has to be both. I know they're not as much afraid of us now when they're coming down nearer. Like this morning I was there gathering up a few sheep and I saw a lad, and he only, I'd say if he ran 30 yards from me, that was about it, like, you know, and he just waited again because he knew I wasn't going to be a threat to him. As I do say to people, they see us an awful lot more than we see them. So they know where they're safe and they just hide.
What are farmers' attitudes to deer like in this area? And I know there's been a few deer management plans put in Wicklow itself. Are farmers quite negative to them?
Farmers get on well with wildlife and probably always have. But when it starts to impact on your income, then it's a different story. Like, just for one example there with me, I was using feed buckets for the sheep and I actually had to go and cover them at night because the deer were coming. And the deer would eat, I'd say, an awful lot more of them than a sheep would, you know. A lot of people are trying to keep up a bit of early grass, and seemingly it's the early grass that they like, because if you have early grass, it's not everywhere else, it won't be out on the hill, so they will probably find that and come down to it, so then they're impacting on your livelihood. If we can manage them and let them stay out on the high hills, sure, they're probably doing a job out there. But when they start coming down, interfering with your fences and your grass and then your pocket, sure, you can't really tolerate that if you can help it.
We heard Danny Healy-Ray there just this week calling for the army to come to shoot deer in Kerry, as well as Matty McGrath. And, you know, because of these sort of traffic sightings that you had, and also one hit a bread van there earlier in the month in Tipperary. And, you know, is it right that politicians are calling for culls? Is it always for the correct reasons? Is it populism? Can it fire people up? And can it end up leaving badly, sort of, wildlife badly treated at the end of the day? If something is very common, Damien, we tend to look at it as a pest, and sometimes that's not the right way to look at it.
One of the problems that we see here in Ireland is that, you know, increasing, particularly in the last 2 to 3 years, we've seen a lot of unqualified political comments, or even at times arbitrary seat of the pants comments with regards to deer management. And, you know, if we look across other countries around the world in terms of how they manage deer, it's really important that we manage deer based on actual scientific data. And while farmers, landowners have genuine concerns around deer and run management, our members and deer hunters want to support and do support landowners, and we work in conjunction. It is really important that we base management on qualified data rather than unqualified political comments. The unintended consequence of that is that we see an increase in areas of deer poaching, because people's view of deer becomes more negative. They see deer almost as a vermin in certain areas, and that has a serious impact in terms of the management and conservation of deer. And really, at the end of the day, we're only guardians of wildlife. You know, as it falls on man to manage them, obviously, in the absence of a predator, but it's important that we do that in the correct manner going forward.
That's Damien Hannigan there again, Suzanne.
Yeah, the best thing that can happen here really is more knowledge about population. UCD, they're doing work on TB, but they're also doing work on holding a really good census. And I think once we see those figures, we'll know a lot more. Involve farmers and environmentalists in looking at habitat and in deer management.
All right, interesting. I know there was a report this week in relation to methane emissions from bovines. I know you'll go off and do a bit of work on that and come back to us. We have a special programme in Glasslough for Christmas next week. So 2 weeks' time, we'll chat to you about that. Look, mind yourself, speaking of Christmas, just mind yourself on the way out there, Suzanne. Okay, sorry about that, Suzanne. Toys from last night. Now, a lot of the work carried out on farms dotted right across the country are done by contractors. So when you see a big tractor or machinery on country roads or across the ditches working in fields, it's not necessarily the farmers that own them and that are driving them. It may be contractors making silage, spreading slurry, planting trees or harvesting crops. And next Wednesday, one of the associations which represents contractors, namely the National Farm and Forestry Contractors of Ireland, they have a big event in the National Show Centre in Dublin starting at 12 noon. Richard White is their chairman. He joins us now from Drangan in County Tipperary. Richard, good morning to you.
Morning, Damien.
What's the weather like in Drangan?
Good morning to all your listeners. It's a damp morning, would you believe?
Right. Is it Drangan?
Is it rain again?
I think that's where our own Mary Wilson comes from, am I right?
Absolutely, absolutely. She's only across the field from me.
From a farm as well, let it be said. Mary,
absolutely.
Presenter of Drive Time. Anyway, we got a sense, if you were listening to us earlier, Richard, of the anxiety and frustration that exists in farming. Is this sense of being underpaid, under attack and feeling undervalued, is it an accurate reflection of the mood at the moment?
That's exactly the reflection of the moment, to be honest about it. You know, there's a big problem there. Income has always been a problem in agriculture. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. That's the real problem. It's down at the moment, basically, and it's a cause. It's an issue for everybody at the moment.
Yeah.
And the beef farmers are very fearful for the future, basically. You can understand that.
Yeah. Now, you're in the machinery business, essentially. That's
absolutely
what you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the city folk up here who got caught up in the protests, they were remarking at how big and expensive the tractors were, sitting outside of all places, the Shelburne Hotel on Tuesday night. And then they were trying to configure, you know, all these big expensive tractors with the low prices which farmers were protesting about. Can you explain that?
Possibly some of the tractors over there were probably owned by some contractors, to be honest.
All right.
And the bigger tractors, basically, that you see there would all be, you know, they'd be taken out on finance, basically. So it's no different than basically buying a car on finance. So they're leased or they're on HP, they're paid over 5 to 7 years. That would be normal procedure, basically.
Right. So there were
you had a mix of tractors there, from what I believe. So you had, you know, you had some older tractors, some newer tractors, and it's a mix there.
Yeah. Well, a lot of tractors can't use public roads. I mean, they're right. So if any of the farmers, you know, wanted to come to Dublin, they'd have to have their tax and insurance and everything up to speed.
Absolutely.
And need a good tractor. If you're driving from Roscommon or Longford, you wouldn't want
now
to wait along 3-5.
Exactly, it would take a while to get to Dublin, to be fair.
So a lot
of new tractors basically would have 50, and some of them are 60k on the road, to be honest with you. So you can see they're, you know, quite lively on the road.
Yeah, up there, tools of the trade. So you need a tractor.
Tools of the trade, absolutely, because tractors power the country, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
When you really think about it, you know, they're a very, very important item on a farm, and obviously with a contractor, to be honest with you, you know, they're our lifeblood.
Yeah. Now, you said that some of the tractors there were belonged to contractors, whether they were borrowed or whether contractors were actually standing side by side with farmers. Are contractors side by side with them? Because if farming's going bad, it's not good news for you.
Well, sure, to be honest with you, there's an old saying, if farmers get a cold, the contractors get pneumonia. That's the problem, to be honest with you. So, that, you know, so it reflects back now. It's very, very important that the farmers are making money, to be honest with you, because if farmers are making money, the contractors make money. The contractors need to be making money. We have a high, you know, we have a high cost business, to be honest with you. Our machines are very, very expensive items, and we have to run it. It's a business, and farming is a business also, and it has to make a profit, to be honest with you. And it's in a time of change, I think, there at the moment. You know what I mean? So we need to set out a new roadmap, I think, basically, for agriculture going forward.
Yeah.
And I would call on Minister Creed to try and draw a new roadmap that's inclusive of every sector, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Including the contractors, obviously.
Okay, and You say there that it's a high cost business because you've got to put a lot of diesel, a lot of fossil
Absolutely.
Fuels into your machines to keep them going every day, and there is talk of carbon tax, and the reason obviously that carbon tax is coming in is to try and incentivize motorists to move away from those. But I'm not sure how far down the road we are with electric tractors.
I don't think, Damien, I don't think it's practical, to be very honest with you. At the moment, like our only fuel is diesel fuel, to be honest.
But that's what I'm saying. Can you be more carbon efficient in your work? We can move to electric cars or cycle to work, but you need your tractor to make a living.
We need our tractors. To be honest with you, there's no alternative fuel, to be honest with you. We've been paying a carbon tax there since about 2011, I think, to be honest with you, and it's about 5 cents a litre. It's currently 5 cents a litre on every litre of fuel we use. As an industry, we're using 350 million litres of fuel every year, to be honest with you.
Right. And how many contractors are there around the country? Is labour hard to come by?
Contractors, I suppose, we have about 1,500 commercial contractors, you know what I mean? Then you have smaller contractors who may also, you know, run farms as well, you know, so that's not unusual. So you have a mix, really. But we would have around 1,500 commercial standalone contracting outfits in this country.
Right, okay. Your event is next Wednesday. It's titled The Next 10 Years.
Absolutely.
And
a question mark, Damien, after it.
A question mark. The Next 10 Years? That's the way it's meant to be said. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's in Clochrane in North County Dublin, there near
Absolutely,
the airport.
Beside Dublin Airport. Okay. Absolutely.
And who do you want to go to it?
We'd like to invite all the contractors and our staff to it, to be honest with you. It's a contractor's day, to be honest about. And for the staff that works with the contractors, who work very hard with contractors, you know, all year round and during the seasons, and the seasonal people that come and work with us, it's for everybody. It's inclusive of everybody in our industry, to be honest with you.
All right, we'll let you back to work there, Richard. Thanks very much for chatting to us. Enjoy your day next Wednesday in Dublin. And that's Richard White there, and he's speaking to us from Drangan in County Tipperary. Now, last week, Richard Kennedy, the CEO of Devenish Nutrition, was named as the EY Entrepreneur of the Year. You might have seen it on RT1 television. This is the moment the announcement was made.
The 2019 EY Entrepreneur of the Year is Richard Kennedy Devenish.
Well, I'm delighted to say that Richard joins me from our Sligo studio. Good morning and congratulations, Richard.
Thank you very much, Damien.
Was your heart racing as you waited for the result, knowing it was on national TV, a bit like the Oscars?
Well, I suppose I didn't really think about that because I never considered that we would win it. You know, I just thought that, you know, it was great to be in it.
Yeah.
It was great to be considered, but I was really gobsmacked and blown away because right. the other participants were incredible companies. You know,
if
you look at what other companies were involved.
Yeah. So for the, it would be like, I mean, I know of you and I've been at conferences with you and so on, but for the majority of our listeners, they probably have never heard of Devenish, and that's no reflection on what you do, but you're a specialist business. Tell us more about Devenish. From farm to fork, where do you fit in?
Well, I suppose, Damien, a number of years ago, and as we evolved and developed since 1997, we have found that, you know, we have to take a responsibility right through that value chain, that is food production. So what we, I suppose our strategy is and has been now One Health, from soil right through to society. And to explain that, I suppose, is we would call ourselves nutritionists. And what that entails is, you know, directing the application and use and utilization of nutrients in the production of food. Now, we are very, you know, we're at the start of that value chain, in that we tend to manufacture, you know, the micronutrients and products that influence the utilization of nutrients.
So you sell them to the feed companies and they're mixed in as kind of supplements, nutritional supplements.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And are to farmers, you know, in terms of like mineral and vitamin packs. But we also, and I suppose that's where we evolved and developed, like we say we go beyond nutrition because we know it has an impact throughout. And we also know and see a responsibility, but also an opportunity for us to guide those nutrients in the most effective and efficient manner.
Yeah.
That's really the sustainability agenda. We're aligned absolutely with the sustainability agenda.
Okay, and I'll come to that in a moment. But the saying goes, we are what we eat. But when we eat meat, it is important for us to know that what they're eating is nutritious too. So you have this logo or mantra that we are what we eat.
What we eat eats.
Absolutely. And that's the way it actually goes. So is this an example of your One Health Soil to Society approach?
Well, it is, of course. And, you know, listening to some other contributors earlier today, you know, farmers are and food producers are food producers. And it starts with the soil. And the soil and the environment provide the nutrients. The farmers utilize them through their animals and crops. And then they return those nutrients and other nutrients to the soil to keep the balance right. So it is a virtuous circle. But the consumer who ultimately, utilizes that food has a requirement for healthy, nutritious food. And healthy, nutritious food is the basis of all life for whatever biosystem. You know, so whether it's soil, whether it's the environment, whether it's animals, whether it's the food or the consumer, all of those eco and biosystems require healthy, nutritious nutrients.
Yeah, but Richard, you know, in a world where we as consumers are continuously forcing a cheap food policy replicated in the supermarkets racing each other to the bottom, you know, and us looking for bargains, looking for cheaper food. You wonder what impact that's going to have on food quality and nutrition in the future, because it costs money to produce quality, nutritious food and to supplement feed. And if farmers are not getting a fair return at the very bottom of the food chain, thanks to us not paying enough for our food at the top of the food chain, and that's the way it's going, do you see what you do actually being in jeopardy?
No, I actually don't. I see the opposite. I suppose one of the mantras that I've had in business all my life and is that you don't always get what you pay for, but you always pay for what you get. And I think that's you know, is reflected very much in what you just laid out there, Damien. Mm. And so I think it's a real opportunity. And wherever we go in the world, and I'm going to Asia the week after next, there is an absolute demand for this soil to society, I suppose, strategy. And you know, whenever I step off this island of Ireland, everybody looks to us. Everybody recognises the incredible quality, the incredible brand we have as a food nation. Mm. And, you know, we need to now, in my opinion, step into that opportunity. Collaborate together. You know, I do get a sense the narrative is changing now. You know, you referred to that recent work from Oxford. We certainly see that farmers and food producers, and most of the innovation we talk about we develop is at farm level. But farmers, and I call them food producers, and Professor Pat Wall would call them health professionals, are now going to be the solution, not the problem.
Yeah, well, just on that, while on the one hand we are demanding cheap food, on the other we are of course demanding quality and a commitment to best practice, and farming finds itself dealing with new environmental constraints, and ruminants are getting blamed for creating greenhouse gases to the point that a lot of environmentalists, they just want us to cut back production, cut cow numbers. That's the root of the problem. Now, can we reduce emissions from agriculture by not cutting numbers? In other words, what research is going on, and that's the business you're in, is there research going on at the moment into feed? So what we feed our cows that would reduce emissions? Is that going to happen?
Yes, there is, but it's not going to be a silver bullet. There isn't one silver bullet out there, but there's lots of research going on. There are numerous products which are being developed at the moment and in the pipeline, whether it's algae, seaweed based products, whether it's rumen modifiers, methane modifiers, but it's also about sequestration and you know, soil and healthy soil sequesters carbon at an incredible rate. You know, we have more hedgerows and trees where again we can sequester carbon and gather carbon. So to me it's and
but,
and
but our do we work, have do we have sorry. Time to develop that research? Because we have targets to meet, and as I said, you know, the Climate Advisory Committee, for example, suggesting that we need to reduce the herd in order to help us meet those IPCC targets. Now, are you saying, and is the industry saying, and is Chagisk and the Irish Cattle Breeding Federation doing their own research as well, and Oxford University and others like Professor Franz Mittelner in the USA, is the message coming through? Hold on, we're working on it, but we need a little bit more time. Throwing the baby out with the bathwater, to coin that phrase, in terms of cutting cow numbers to reduce emissions, is one answer, but there could be another answer, which is not to cut numbers, but actually improve genetics and improve feed, which at the same time we could continue with developing our exports abroad, which is part of a big plan, as you know, and which obviously keeps farmers and rural communities in clover, but at the same time reducing emissions. So do we need more time?
I suppose that's why I'm so passionate about collaboration and collaboration across that value chain, because I think we can accelerate it through collaboration. We will need more time. As a matter of fact, there won't be enough time if we fight amongst ourselves, or if we point across the table at our colleagues in different sectors in this value chain to say it's your fault, or back to the point you were making about populism recently or earlier. So I think we have the loads of time if we step into it together in a proactive way. It was great to hear the young farmer earlier talk about, an appetite and willingness to change. And that's what we've seen in Irish farming all my life, that absolute appetite and willingness to change and modify what people are doing to deliver a better result.
Well, finally, Richard, your HQ is in Belfast, Devonish, huge company doing really, really well. But you're living in Sligo, you're from Sligo, you're a man of Sligo. Why are you so committed to staying there and doing that commute?
Well, I suppose I'm not in Belfast every day. I may be one day a week in Belfast, but I absolutely love Sligo. I come from a farming background. I come from the business of agriculture. My father was had a livestock mart, and that's where I cut my teeth in terms of industry. But I also am passionately engaged in rural development and rural engagement. The quality of life, Damien, you and I have spoken about this before, the quality of life, the down-to-earth aspect of living in the country has always appealed to me. But it's so important to have money turning in those rural parishes and rural areas.
Yeah,
so for us, it's for me and myself and Jacqueline, we decided to move back because that's where we want to spend our money, and we love our local area.
Well, you do indeed, and I know I'm keeping you away now from the farm. You're going off now to tend to your cattle. Most of the CEOs go and play golf or go sailing or whatever, but you're going to where you love first, and that's walking the land this morning. Richard Kennedy, we'll chat to you again in the future. Thank you very much, and once again, congratulations on that very prestigious award. Richard Kennedy, CEO of Devonish Nutrition. Well, finally, earlier this week, Brenda Donoghue found herself in the company of none other than Graham Norton. He was visiting County Cork to launch a book about the history of Bandon Grammar School, where he was a student himself once upon a time. And Brenda, well, she wanted to ask Graham about his connection to rural Ireland. And she began by asking him about the Irish Farmers' Journal and their much-loved small ad section.
We have the Farmer's Journal here and we have the personal ads. So I'm just wondering, as part of your novel, A Keeper, it kind of really kicks off when she answers one of these ads. Where did you come across them? Like, how did you know about them?
Well, I knew about them years ago and I just assumed, in the days of the World Wide Web, they were long gone. And then I got a message from the journal saying, no, they are still here. And it's amazing that they're still going.
I've just ring-fenced one or two. Anyone you're
interested
in. There's
a sincere male, he's 63, farming background. He's lost the farm.
Yeah.
that's never a good sign, is it? Yeah. Seeks similar but your man, late 50s to 70s. Well, that's me, I'm in.
I know.
For friendship, socialising, interests, including walking, countryside, gardening, music, sports, current affairs, social drinker, non-smoker, any region can travel, anything, anywhere. But no sign of romance.
No sign of romance. What about this guy's a little more
South Tip.
Isn't it amazing? You've
South,
met him.
South Tip already sounds like a euphemism. South Tip, gay male, 30, he's only 37. Does he not have an app?
I know.
Like, you're 37. Get a smartphone. Anyway, what's he doing? Would like to meet male for friendship/relationship. Non-smoker, non-drinker, likes country walks, DVD. Is that like...
I don't know.
Is that films?
Like DVDs?
Or is that some sort of strange...
I don't know.
Now he's laughing at me.
Yeah.
You don't even know what DVD stands for. Cycling. He also likes cycling.
So you were brought up around here. Would you consider yourself kind of a country background, a rural environment?
I suppose. I mean, we lived in Kilkenny for a tiny little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But really, we moved around an awful lot. But all those houses were always sort of outside somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing with Irish people. Unless you live in Dublin or right in Cork, you don't really live. People don't live in Bandon. They live, on the outskirts.
Yeah.
So you already, you're kind of more attached to the country. And like this school where I'm at, that it's on a farm. And I remember there used to be, after the potato harvest, there'd be a party called the Spud Hop. And they threw a kind of disco for the kids, for helping with the harvest. And there used to be a pig farm, just where the dining hall is. That used to be a pig farm. And like you'd be in classes and they'd be, oh, it did stink. And they'd be kind of herding the the pigs past us. So it was as rural as a school could be.
And you have your own wine now, or you have a share in a wine company. Yeah. So you're interested in that production. Would you ever see yourself going into food production?
Probably not, no. That seems like hard work.
Yeah.
And also because it spoils. You know, whereas wine can stay in a bottle for a hell of a long time. And I've got the gin, which they make down here in Skibbereen. And, you know, that's great because you make it, it's in a bottle. And then if somebody buys it, great. But if they don't, it can stay in that bottle for a very long time. And, you know, eventually I'll get to it.
Now, when you were younger, you flew to the city to live city life, away from kind of the countryside. As you get slightly older, do you find yourself veering back towards appreciating long walks and scenery and all of that?
Yeah, I have to say, you know, I spend the summers here, and every year when I go back to London, I'm slightly less in love with it. I'm not out of love with it, but when I go back to London, it's just the older you get, the less patience you have for it. You know, living there, it's hard work. You know, getting around, going to see a friend, getting to a meeting, going to work. It's all a struggle. So eventually I'd like to spend more time kind of in a rural place.
Well, just in case, I'll leave you with the copy of the Farmer's Journal.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I love cycling and dividers.
So there's Graham off to read his copy of the Farmer's Journal this week. If you have your own story with the Irish Farmer's Journal small ads, brenda@rte.ie would love to know. And if you're interested in finding out more about Bandon Grammar School, a history by Ian Coombs is available for €30.